Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention before we start. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listened to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.
The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Bright Side Chat.
Alrighty, I'm back. Let's talk about Into the Spider-Verse.
All right, man. Long time no see, DJ.
Yeah, hey. I like to come down to the store, you know? Hang out, talk comics. That's what we're all about.
Hey, I'm here all day.
Yeah. So. tip your waiter.
I just flew in, and boy, are my arms tired.
Okay, we just lost all of our listeners.
Yeah, right. Anybody under the age of 35 or so, we lost.
Two computers just shut off. all right, so I've seen it twice already. I've seen it in 2D and in 3D.
Did we say what we saw?
Yeah, we said, let's talk some Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay. See, I should be paying attention.
Yeah, you're too busy flapping your arms.
right. I was flying in.
Jesus. You know, hey, the jokes that keep on giving, you know?
That's right.
Okay, so we're talking Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, John. You awake?
Yeah,
you awake,
yeah. Or is this, I am. I am.
Okay.
I'm here. All right. Hello? Is this thing on?
And, I've seen it twice, John. It comes out in 2D and 3D. All right.
Yeah. 3D is like adding a whole nother dimension. Did you know that?
Yes, it is. Oh, boy. So, I got to say, the first time I saw it in 2D. And okay. I don't know if you noticed this. We'll talk a little spoiler-free for a little bit. Did it feel like my wife and I saw it together opening night? And it felt like we were in a 3D movie, but we didn't have our glasses. Did you notice that on some of the artwork, the way they drew around the edges of some of the stuff with the green and the red?
I didn't really pick up on that too much. Other than that, I just felt like that was the art style. In the sense that this really felt like you were watching a comic book on the screen. You
right.
know, the way they did it was great with, you know, you had the... like the dialogue boxes popping up
yep.
at certain points. You had like the old Batman bam kapow pop up a couple times
yep.
on the screen. And the way it was drawn, in some cases it almost looked like the 3D dot, you know, printer.
Yep. Well, pictures. They did that.
So I didn't necessarily pick up on the 3D part of it. If I did, I just thought it was the way
yeah.
the art was supposed to be.
So my wife thought it was a little distracting. The 2D version.
Okay.
She thought she liked the movie. She just thought it was a little bit, the artwork was, I agree with you. I looked at it the same way as you. I was just saying what she was interpreted as that.
Right.
And I also heard other people say the same thing. I was in another comic book store today. Sorry.
Oh
yeah.
Man, shame on you.
Well, we just didn't record the conversation. You're the only one I record with, John.
Oh, as long as I'm the only one.
So yeah, he said the same thing, that it was that same kind of, it felt like it was, could have been a 3D version. But,
right.
Like you said, with that dot matrix, the Roy Lichtenstein comics with the dots and everything like that, they did that
yeah.
throughout the movie. I felt that each character was drawn to their genre, like the anime that
Right. Very much. Yes.
Yeah. Was it Spider Penny or
Spider? Manga
Penny,
Spider.
Penny Parker.
Yeah.
She was. Yeah. She was drawn in that anime look, and she was textured the same. Same right. with Spider Noir. He was textured the right. same. But the most of them, like Peter Parker. Oh, even Peter Porker, the Spider Ham, he was drawn
right,
in that Warner Brothers type style, yeah. you know. But with those,
yeah, I thought
those dots.
Go ahead,
that
go ahead.
The last thing I want to end up with those dots. Did you see the Michael Jordan sneakers, the special edition?
Yeah,
those sneakers yeah. have the dots on them.
Right,
that animation style of shading, which I thought was really cool. But the 3D version is you have to see it in 3D. It everything yeah. you said about the boxes and that really it when you watch it in 3D, it looks like you're looking at a comic book. And when they framed it out, remember when they put the different frames on the screen and you had different things?
Yeah.
You were looking into each frame. So like the 3D went into the frame, and it was a lot better in 3D. It really, I have to say, and I'm not a huge 3D fan, but
yeah, I'm not either.
I think
either,
we said that last week. Like, I think we said
yeah,
that
we
about
Ready Player One,
where it really suited the movie. Well, this it right. really, really does. It's probably one of my favorite 3D movies. It was that good.
Okay, I do want to see it again at some point. You know, I've got a couple of other movies that are pressing that I need to see first, but. You know, so if I get to see it again, I'll see if we can see it in 3D. But I really liked, like you were saying, with the art style. It didn't feel like it was like a cohesive animated movie in the sense that, you're right, you had different characters on the screen at the same time that all were drawn or done in a different style, which you don't normally see.
No. Yeah, it'd be like having
an animated...
Well, it'd be like having a comic book done by like five different artists.
Exactly, all on the same page.
Right.
Where each one drew a different panel. But I really liked it because it felt like it brought personality, you know, it brought the personality of those characters through because they were done that way.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
I really thought it was, it was innovative in the way they did that because you don't normally see that. You know, you go see any kind of Pixar or Disney animated movie and the style is always the same throughout,
right?
With every character, you don't. To my knowledge, I've never seen a movie done like that.
No, and
you know
that's what makes it. It kind of. I don't want to say blew me away, but it did. It was very, very impressive that it makes you at times like speechless. Like you're like,
yeah.
All right, what can I say? How do I describe this? Because I don't think it has been done. Where would you do that? It would,
yeah,
would take this opportunity of using a multiverse type thing to have these
right.
characters come through and all be in a different style.
You know, the only thing that pops into my mind would be like a Ready Player One or even something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where, you know, you could see those different styles come through.
Right.
They didn't do it that way, but that's where I could see that working.
Right.
Because you're crossing so many different pop culture
but what was,
characters.
Right.
You know.
But see, in Ready Player One, what was interesting in this movie is, so maybe they did do it in Ready Player One. I'm not saying they did or didn't, but they would have done it with different characters. In this movie,
right.
they were all Spider-Men. Which was really kind of
right.
cool, you know. It's, so it's like that's what really separates the drawing style, the acting style, really, if you get into it, of each actor, which is a lot of people talking about Nicolas Cage, and you're like, "How he's going to be Spider-Man?" I thought he was perfect. His voice was perfect for that.
But you know, I didn't know it was him.
I really
didn't know he was. Yeah, I didn't know it was him until. I saw the credits afterwards because I kept thinking to myself, man, I know that voice.
Yeah.
But I can't place it. Now, the other one was Peter Parker, who I felt certain I'd heard his voice before. But then when I looked up the actor that did him, I have no idea who the guy is. So it's not somebody that I knew from a movie.
Peter B. Parker. Yeah.
Right. But his voice through the whole thing just sounded like somebody that I've seen a million times. Then when I looked, like I said, I looked him up on IMDb, and it's not somebody that I even recognize from anything. So just a voice. I guess he just has that kind of voice.
Yeah, it was Jake Johnson. I don't recognize the name. I recognize his face. I don't know of what else he would have been in.
Right. But yeah, Nick Cage. Now that once I knew it was him, it clicked into my mind, and it was like so obvious that it was him. But
yeah. And the other one was Liv Schreiber.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew he was in it. I forgot he was in it because listening to Kingpin throughout, I didn't really put the two and two together until
the same thing.
Second time I saw it, I was like, oh, obviously. It's like
I had that I had that same familiarity with the voice where it's like I know who this is, but I can't place it. I loved his style too, by the way. You know, the way they animated Kingpin.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, it reminded me of the guy from Minions, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it had that kind of style. But, you know, just what a damn mountain of a man he was in that movie.
Yeah, larger than, way larger than life.
Right.
Yeah, it's not really a spoiler, but that one part where he gets out of a vehicle. And you see the vehicle actually lean back once he gets out.
Right.
The suspension goes up on the side that he gets out of.
Right.
Because he's so big.
Yeah. You know, how does it rank for you? Like, you know, you go into this movie hearing that it's, you know, a 100 on Rotten Tomatoes and it's the best comic book movie ever made. So after seeing it twice, do you feel like it's the best comic book movie ever made?
I don't know about the best. I love the artwork. I love the style of it. That I would say it's the best. It's probably the most creative. But as far as comic book movies go, I don't know. It's like how do you beat out just this year alone with Infinity War, and then you go back to the Christopher Nolan Batmans. Those are literally, you know, films.
Right.
You know what I mean? Those aren't movies, you know, those. And I'm just joking there. But it's the meaning behind it, I think, is incredible. If you want to get, you know, and we'll talk about that in spoilers and stuff when we get into some of the other things. But I can't say it's one of my favorite. I mean, Spider-Man is one of my favorite anyways, if not my favorite. So with their, you know, having seen it just recently twice, you have the recency bias. I don't want to come out and say that it's the best ever. It's definitely the most creative. I will say that by far. You know,
loved it. Well, I loved it and I thought it was a fantastic movie. And I agree with you. It was very innovative and it had a lot of great things going for it, but I don't feel it's the best comic book movie I've ever seen. You know, I don't think it beats Infinity War. I don't think it beats The Dark Knight. It might be the best Spider-Man movie I've ever seen. But I don't know if it beats the first Spider-Man.
Well, that first Spider-Man, that's what I was just going to say, back in 2002, that one, Tobey Maguire. That one, I remember walking out of the theater thinking that's the best movie I had ever seen because I loved Spider-Man so much growing up, and that was the first real big incarnation of him. So that, but have you rewatched that recently?
No, I haven't. But I mean, I've seen it more than once,
right,
for sure. But yeah, you know, it probably doesn't.
So
it's probably not as good as I remember it being.
I would probably rank this one higher. Like if you asked me a year from now, if you asked me 5 years from now, I would rank this one higher. It's going to take a lot for a Spider-Man movie to beat this because of the artwork to me and the style will not age. You know what I mean? That will always be there. You're not going to look back 20 years from now and go, well, they could have drawn that differently. No, they drew it the way they wanted to. This was done.
Right.
Whereas Spider-Man 1 or, you know, 2002, that doesn't really hold up as well. The special effects aren't as good. I've watched it. I like the movie. I like the story. I like Spider-Man 2, but it just doesn't hold up as well. Far From Home was really good, but I like this one better. I like the artwork behind it.
What I would say, yeah, no matter how advanced we get with the way we can make movies, in any live-action movie, there's always going to be a certain amount of you wanted to do things, but the technology wasn't there. You can never really say that in an animated film, because no matter what, anything that you want to do, you can pretty much do. So there's always going to be a little bit of that. You know, going back, even, you know, you go back to 1977 with Star Wars, and in 1977, the special effects were mind-blowing, you know, just blow you away.
Right.
But, you know, George Lucas tinkered with those movies for years because he wanted to do things that he just simply wasn't able to do back then. And now when you look at it, I mean, you know, again, I'll always love Star Wars, but the special effects, they're not all that. You get better special effects now on a regular TV show than you got in Star Wars. So, yeah, fast forward to 2002. When we saw that Spider-Man in 2002, again, the effects were mind-blowing. It's like, oh, my God, look at what they did. But now they don't hold up because we can do more. So, I mean, that's always going to be – I think that'll always be the case no matter what. But so you're right. 5 years from now, this will still hold up because they were able to do everything they wanted to do.
Right, to the point that a lot of the styles in this movie, they could have done more. They had the capabilities to draw some of these things better than they did. They just chose not to. So this is going to stand the test of time. This to me is very artistic. The story is really good. We'll get into that in spoilers. The acting, you know, the voices were written fit perfect. It is, I guess, after all that, it is probably my favorite Spider-Man movie to date. I actually can't see how you beat it, to be honest with you.
It's going to be hard. I mean, you know, you said earlier Far From Home, which it was Homecoming, because Far From Home
that's coming out. Sorry.
But Far From Home, it would have to go a long, long way before it was a better movie. And I don't know that it will be a better movie.
Well, so did you see my tweet today? And it falls in line perfectly with this, and I didn't mean it to. I was actually responding to somebody else, but they're doing the live action Aladdin movie with Will Smith.
Yeah, and don't even get me started.
Yeah, the thing to me is they're doing it's literally a live action movie, and we talked about Lion King and how it's not live action. It's, you know, it's artists rendering them, the animals, and that to me is like, that to me is part of the Disney magic. This obviously Spider-Man isn't a Disney movie, but this is Sony. It's when I was growing up, I wanted to be an artist, and one of the things as a little kid is like, oh, maybe someday I could draw for Disney. Now, at the time, Disney wasn't doing the stuff they're doing now with Pixar, and young artists now would probably still thinking, I could work for one of these studios. Right. But when you do a live-action movie, not that I don't like live-action movies, that's an art into itself, but this is different. This is something that I look at and I say, I would like to be a part of that. That's something to dream for. As an artist, what am I going to be for a Will Smith live-action movie? Doesn't mean I won't like it. You know what I mean? What am I going to be in that? So that's part of the magic to me of these animated films. And then to take them and turn them into live action, it's like you're taking away part of that magic, if not all of it, to me. So, and that's part of
we covered that before, too. Yeah, I don't know that these live action remakes need to exist at all.
Well,
I think we discussed it before.
It doesn't mean they don't need to be remade. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't get an opportunity to do that. I'm just saying for me personally that it ruins part of the magic of what was there in the first place. Like when Disney came out with Snow White, Cinderella, all of these movies, people were amazed by that artwork. To be able to go to a feature film and see that on the screen, that was a big deal. And we're still pushing those boundaries now. And, you know, we're basically talking comic books, And these are just live-action comic books. And this movie, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, is literally a live-action, you know, comic book. It's a comic book come to life. And like I said, if you see it in 3D, you really feel that. Because they have that, they have scenes where the pages are turning right on the screen, and you're like, oh, oh. It really, really, it feels like you're going into a comic book.
Yeah.
All right, you ready to talk some spoilers now?
Yeah, let's go. All right, let's go. I'm ready.
All right. Stan Lee. That scene with Stan Lee was, I mean, you couldn't have had a more appropriate scene with, especially after his passing. It's like they didn't know when they taped that scene and filmed that scene that that was going to be the case. Everything that Stan Lee always said about Spider-Man is anybody can put that mask on and you don't know who's underneath. And then you have that one scene which summarizes his entire career and the entire Spider-Man universe, in that he says it'll eventually fit. It'll always
fit. It always fits eventually.
The best Stan Lee cameo ever, right there.
Oh, yeah.
Because it summarized
everything. Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that. I think it was really it was really great scene.
They put the little thing next to him where, like, no returns, the sign.
Right.
Which is, like, it almost, like, didn't need to be there. That's not what that was. That scene was about. They put it in as kind of, like, to make it a joke, but it's not a joke.
Right.
That's summarizing the entire thing. The Miles Morales, and then getting into the which Peter Parker is from which dimension and which Earth. And I thought so Miles Morales isn't on our Earth. We're actually seeing another Earth. I don't remember all the numbers. I know our Earth is supposed to be 616.
Right. We're 616.
What Earth was?
I think
Morales
theirs
on,
is like it's like 111.87 or something like that. It's some crazy number, but yeah, you know, you kind of start out with Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and you think he's ours. You know, it feels like he's the Spider-Man from our world, and then you find out that he's not. You know,
right? And everything leads to that he is not our Spider-Man because. Right. He is actually the perfect Spider-Man.
Right.
And our Spider-Man was never perfect. Stan Lee did not want him to be perfect. You know, his heroes were imperfect so that we could relate to them better because we're imperfect. So that Peter Parker was perfect in every way and ended up dead.
But I love that he had a theme song, and it was from 1967, or whenever year
that
cartoon came out.
Yep. Yeah, the original theme song.
Right.
One thing, I had this conversation today already, and they tried to explain it to me, and I still didn't understand. So, Spider-Gwen comes through.
Right.
A week before.
Right.
But the only reason all of the Spider-Man characters come through is that Peter Parker's head gets shoved in between the whatever that scientific thing that's going on there. Remember, when Peter Parker was battling and Miles was watching the whole thing, and his head gets shoved in there, and then that activates all the Spider-Men from all the universes coming in.
Right.
Well, if she came through the week before, what activated her? Do you follow?
Well, yeah, but I got the sense that they had all been there for a couple of days. Like, it felt like they all came through at the same time. We just met each one of them at a different point in the story. Yeah, I think they all came through in the very same night at the same time. And we just got to see the perspective of each one on what they were doing for those couple of days.
But Spider-Gwen showed up a week earlier because she met Miles at school before the event took place.
I guess I'd have to rewatch. I've only seen it once, so I'm not 100% sure. But my take was that they all came through at the same time, because even when Peter B. Parker first meets Miles, he had been there for several days. It wasn't like he just came through.
Yeah, well, he had just come through after the event. He hadn't been there several days. He had come through right after the event. And then they met all of the other ones when they went to Aunt May's house. And
they had all been there already, too.
they had all bet that you don't know how long, but they had gone right to Aunt May's house to figure out what's going on, because they all know Aunt May, obviously.
Right.
So
I don't know. I felt like it was maybe it was just a honestly, maybe it's just a hole in the story. I don't know for sure. But
well,
my impression was they all came through at the same time, and we just met them in different points. Because let's say that the spider people were hanging out in Aunt May's house for 4 days or whatever, 5 days. Well, that would just mean Gwen was in the school for 5 days.
Right. But do you see what I'm saying? Their definition was the people I talked to today said, oh, well, when you come through, you doesn't know when you come through in time. And I was like, I didn't know there was a time travel thing here.
I don't know if I buy that part of it.
But she definitely, when you see it again, you'll see what I'm talking about. She definitely met him before the event took place. Because remember when Miles is walking to school at the beginning of the movie and he goes by where they're all playing basketball on the playground in that area, and they're like, you hear people talking about the earthquake from the night before. Well, that was what they called those events, an earthquake, because it shakes the city. So she came through on a previous earthquake. When Peter Parker died, that was the event that brought in all the Spider-Men.
Right.
So I don't want to talk, take the whole podcast
talking about
that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said,
you'll see what I'm talking about. I don't think it's a hole in the story. I just thought it was kind of like, where did she'd been there for a while. So
here's what I didn't get about the whole Peter. The thing I didn't get about the Miles and Gwen relationship, though, in school, is that when Peter B. Parker and Miles met each other face to face, they instantly could vibe on each other, and their spider sense was going off, and they knew that they were both spider people and that they were like each other. And that happened every time one of the spider characters met another one. They all said the same thing. Oh, you're just like me. So why didn't Miles and Gwen vibe on each other in school, especially when his hand is sticking to her hair? Like, how does she not know he's like her?
So I can answer that for you. So it actually they actually talk about that in the movie. So later on in the movie, she says, when I came through, my spider sense told me to go to this school. So when I got to that school, she says that she actually vibed on Miles. She does say that. But Miles can't vibe on her yet because he hasn't become Spider-Man yet.
Well, no. Well, obviously,
his
hand was sticking to her hair.
Oh, yeah,
so he had already been bitten.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Yeah, he had already, the very first time met her.
Right.
No, I don't think
so. Not the first time, but the second when they went back to school, right.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. They should have been the same thing, like two magnets sticking together, and it didn't happen. So that just confused me a little bit, like why it didn't happen with those two. Even though it happened with the other ones. But it sounds like, we opened our conversation with two complaints or questions.
They're not complaints. I found it interesting. I'm like, because I'm like, what did I miss? And it's like,
well, that's
she
what
does
I was
explain
too.
Part of it, though. So for what your question was, she does explain part of it. I clearly I have to see it a third time.
Right. Oh, dang. I have to go watch it again.
Yeah. His uncle. You knew he was.
Well, I knew that. I knew that anyways.
Yeah.
Hell, they even set that up in Homecoming with the live action one. So.
Yeah. And just from a home theater point of view, did you happen to notice Uncle Aaron's speakers in his apartment?
Yeah.
They're like refrigerators.
Yeah.
And they're on either side of the couch. I was like, those things are awesome.
I know. I was like, I wish I had those.
That was pretty
and
funny.
And that would bring you back to, what does Uncle Aaron do for a living? Because.
Well, actually I thought that. And because you know who he is and that he's a villain. Those are the kind of speakers you buy out of the white van when you were in college. You're like, dude, I paid $50 for these. Each? Yeah. No, all four.
Total. Yeah. I thought he was a little. I don't remember the Prowler being quite that powerful in the comics either. Like he was kind of a badass in that movie, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really cool. You know, obviously we knew that. You know, we knew that going in that you know he was the bad guy. But I still thought that they did a really good job of you know like they built that relationship with him and Miles to where you knew that the letdown. Like, you knew how that was going to go down once he found out.
Right. That was going to be his...
Like, it was going to be a huge, right, basically his Uncle Ben moment. Like, you knew that that was going to have something to do with it.
Right, because Peter B. Parker had Uncle Ben.
Right.
But, and then you heard each of them had an Uncle Ben moment.
They all have their Uncle Ben moment, right. Their great power comes great responsibility moment. That
right,
you know,
yeah,
they all have. So.
That was pretty funny. But don't finish that
right.
sentence.
right.
Doc Ock was actually Olivia, Dr.
Right.
Olivia Octavius.
Right.
And did you notice her glasses? Before she exposed herself as Doc Ock, she was just, you know, she's in the lab coat. She had glasses on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously you know who she is, but she hasn't been exposed right. as Doc Ock yet.
Well, I didn't know who she was till they said her name, though.
Oh, really? Look at her glasses.
Yeah, first.
Look at her glasses. They're octagons.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's wearing little, they're shaped like octagons.
Of course, once they said Dr. Octavius, I knew what was going to happen, but.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't know who she was until they said that.
Is Goober that, you know, they called it a Goober? The little piece, is that new to the movie, or have I missed that in the past?
I think it's new to the movie. I don't recall ever seeing that.
Because that was, I thought that was pretty cool.
And yeah.
Because I thought it was new to the movie, because the way they did it was, they were summarizing, like, all of the different events that have gone on in each of their lives. Like, oh, this is what happens, and this is how the story goes, and then we're going to do this. And
right.
Oh, this thing's just – let's just call it a goober. Let's get it over right. with. It's like, it's a goober, yeah. okay? It's in every episode.
Yeah, no, and I thought they did a really good job with that, where they kind of introduced every character exactly the same way.
Right, right.
You know, spinning through their reality and – you know, what they do. And
yeah, they start with, you know. I know you've heard this before, but, right. and then they go on. And then they did that when they summarized, what they do, like three of them at once.
Yeah.
When they did bang, 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 bang. And they
well,
were
time,
all going.
You know, time was running short.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Spider-Ham was really well done.
I did too, you know, because honestly, that's a character that you don't feel like should be there, you know.
No, but it gets back into the artistic part, and right. it makes me hopeful that if they do four or five sequels, maybe they'll be the one with me, because
right.
in some universe somewhere, I'm a Spider-Man, and now
exactly.
I know I'm 48 years old, but I'm still holding out hope.
It's like, well, Peter B. Parker was no spring chicken.
Well, he was the old version of our Spider-Man.
And honestly, the best part of Peter B. Parker is I now have my Halloween costume for the next 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
five.
Yeah,
actually,
well, forever.
this movie gave us. You can make one up.
Well,
just put
but
all you need is the name tag. Because remember in the movie they said, well, you're going to need a name tag when Aunt May's like, you're going to need these.
Yeah, but, I mean, you get the spider shirt, I've already got the dad bod going, you get your gray army jacket and sweatpants, and that's your Spider-Man costume forever, so.
You know why he was wearing sweatpants? And he had two different shoes? Did you notice that?
Yeah, no, I don't know why.
Well, you see when he came through? He got all torn up, and he crashed into Times Square.
Yeah.
And it's like his Spidey suit was all torn up, and he had nothing else, so he stole, well, not stole, but it looks like he got it off of a bum.
Right.
So that's what, he's just wandering around New York. He doesn't know where he is, so he's just got on, he's like, bum's clothes.
I mark my words. You'll see me in October. spider shirt and sweatpants.
There you go. Yeah, you just got to do the little name tag. Tell it which universe you're from.
Hello, my name is.
Yeah, exactly. I like the dance shoes, Spider-Gwen. girls everywhere are going to love that. My daughter's a dancer. I know.
Yeah.
She hasn't seen the movie yet. I'm actually looking forward to her seeing it. She's 19, but I think she'll really get into it.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's the best part of this whole, the whole movie is that it's for everybody.
You just got to get bit by that spider, you know.
That was great. When the whole build up, and you expect him to go, ow! And then he just goes, oh. He just knocks it off.
Just flicks it up, yeah.
Flicks it off, cool. Walks away.
You know, so we meet Aunt May halfway through this movie, and it's the, you know, the perfect Peter Parker's version of Aunt May, I guess. And
yeah,
you know, it's funny
that's
how
a good point.
You know,
Lily Tomlin.
They come and they knock on the door, and you know, we're used to Aunt May not really being in the know of the fact that Peter is Spider-Man, but this one definitely knows that Peter is Spider-Man.
You
know, because she says, oh, let me guess, you're from a different reality. Like, I've heard this a million times before. And then,
well, that's because she'd already met the other ones, too.
Right. But you really get the feeling she knew all along, because she takes him back to the secret shed, and they go to the secret Spidey layer.
Yeah, and Peter B. Parker's like, yeah, I got one of these.
Right.
It's a little shed in the backyard.
But to me, it was like she was Alfred, you know, and I think she was kind of part of the whole thing with Peter and helped him to, because you wonder how Peter got the money to build something like that, because as far as I know, there's no Tony Stark in this reality.
You don't know. He's the perfect Parker.
I guess he got a bunch of money from his theme song and his breakfast cereal. And,
he had all the suits.
Yeah, he built his secret layer.
That was pretty cool to see.
But yeah, the whole time, as I kept thinking to myself, she's Alfred. You know, she says Alfred, and I think she might have even kind of been in his ear, you know, talking to him through some of those missions, and really was part of it. So I thought that was pretty cool, because we've never seen Aunt May like that before.
Yeah, that was really cool. And it was, I'm wondering, and when they do sequels, are we going to get different Aunt Mays like we have in live action ones we have now, and Not Far From Home.
Homecoming.
Yeah. See, I got that on my head. That's the thing. This movie, I keep calling it a show. This movie it's really opened everything up.
Because you can go anywhere.
Yeah. And
but you could literally make up anything, as you know, as we saw with Spider-Ham. Literally you can make up any kind of Spider-Man you want. And then you could do anything with it, because that reality's Spider-Man could be anything, you know. I don't know why we haven't seen yet, and I guess just the sense that maybe they don't want to go this route, but like, why don't we have the villain? Like, why don't we have some evil Spider-Mans running around? In some realities, there's got to be, Venom, but Venom's not, that's not the same, though. Like, in certain realities, Peter Parker has to be a scumbag, right? It's like,
really?
You know, I mean, it's certain. If you've got infinite possibilities and got realities where Peter Parker can be a pig, then you've got realities where, you know, he can be the villain, you know.
This isn't the DCU. It's like, because that's what they did in one of the CW crossovers.
They showed
the evil versions of themselves.
I'm just saying,
I guess
it's
got to
be there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere there's got to be one. So, but even in the comics, like, because, you know, the Spider-Verse isn't a new concept. It's been in the comics for quite a long time. And they've done many, many more versions of Spider-Man than what we saw on the movie.
So if you can have a perfect version, you could have a completely imperfect version.
Exactly.
As well.
And so far we haven't seen that. And I'm surprised that they haven't.
That could be the sequel. He goes against himself.
That's what I'm saying.
Jumps to the end credit scene when maybe they're foreshadowing Spider-Man versus Spider-Man.
Yeah. Did you point at me? You pointed at me first.
Yeah. That whole thing.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved how they jumped in and they were instantly in the, you know, the 60s version of Spider-Man.
Yeah. He's going back to, what was it, 67?
Yeah.
He said going back to 60. So that's the time travel part.
Right.
And he had the, what did he didn't call it a goober, though. I think they tried to at the end, and that it wasn't the goober that they were fixing to get him to go to 67 or whatever.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that could be fun. And yeah. that, you know, Spider-Man on Spider-Man. There's just so many ways they can go with this.
Right. And like I said, they always want, you know, they always want Peter to be the redeemed character. So, I mean, I can see why they don't necessarily want to have the bad version. But it just stands to reason in infinite realities that he's got to be out there somewhere.
Right. You know, just like the DJ Spider-Man's out there somewhere.
Exactly. Right. Somewhere there's DJ Spider-Man.
Yep. So, and we know where the John Spider-Man is. He's in 2019's Halloween.
That's right. Wearing sweatpants and an army jacket. So,
how about Spider-Ham? That at the end. That's all, folks. Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. Can he say that legally?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that is the only. I think he can't say it legally because he didn't stutter it.
Like, right. Bleep, bleep, bleep. That's all, folks.
I thought the first time I saw it at the end when Spider-Man he slapped the stick when he said I slapped the sticker where his dad can't find it. I thought that was on the Black Panther or Wakanda.
Oh yeah,
and it's not. It's some lion.
It's just a gargoyle or something.
It's a lion. But, it's actually a lion because I saw it online. Somebody had screen grabbed it, and you can see it has a lion's mane. What about the Spider-Noir and the Rubik's Cube?
Yeah, yeah, that was awesome.
He didn't know what to do because I couldn't figure out if, like, I can't figure out if he can't see the colors or he's blown away by seeing the colors.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because when he took it back to his universe, he had the, remember he was showing it under the glass case and right. In the background it says, amaze your senses. And it was, so he must have been able to take it back and see the colors.
Right, because I guess he sees everything in black and white, right?
Right, so. But he could see, for some reason, it seems like he could see that. Because remember, he's like, is this purple? And they're like, right. No, that's not purple. It's like, this is amazing. What? I can't figure this thing out, but I will.
Yeah, he was a really great character. I really liked the relationship with Miles and his dad, too. Like that scene at the beginning where he's dropping him off at school. And
I wish they hadn't put that in a trailer.
I know, because it did kind of ruin it.
It was really funny.
But it was very funny, you know. He's like, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you, Miles.
Yeah.
Copy. Say, that. I love you.
Oh, what do you say? That's a copy.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what scene I really liked? And it gets back into the leap of faith. And you didn't know it at the time. You just thought it was kind of funny. Is when he went up, when he first got his powers and he goes up on top of the building. And he looks down, and then instead of jumping, they show him running back down the stairs.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And then he gets down there, and he looks up, and he runs back up the stairs again, and then trips over the one shoelace that he... It's a statement.
Right.
I thought that was really good. And then the leap of faith thing, which I thought was a great way to summarize the whole movie. It
right.
was, you know, the whole thing is, hey, it's just, you know... You won't make it. Right. And he puts it back on Peter B. Parker at the end. He's like, how do I know I'm not going to screw it up? You won't. It's
right.
just
it's
a leap
of
faith.
Faith.
And at the end, when he's like, when Peter says to Miles, he's like, I love you. I'm so proud of you. And then he's like, wait a minute. Do I want to have kids? Because it's all of a sudden dawning on him. He's like, this is pretty good.
Yeah, that would probably be back to the other thing. I thought it was great when he meets MJ at the party or wherever they are, and she thinks he's a waiter.
Right. That was
Spider-Man.
That was really good.
Like,
and they're like, it can't be this easy.
Right.
It is this easy.
But we're not bringing her water.
No, bread.
Bread. Yeah, we're not bringing them bread. They did a really great job with all of that. And there was such emotion in this movie. You know, you had that whole scene with him and MJ kind of at the end where he comes back to her, but you know, you had that scene with Miles and his dad when he's webbed to the chair and he's sitting at the door listening to his dad talk to him through the door.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even further on when, you know, he runs up to him as Spider-Man and throws his arms around him, and it's just like,
yeah,
with
and
a
he's
ton of emotion
talking in the deep voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I look forward to working with you in the future.
Yeah, but
I love you.
There was really a lot
Wait,
of heart, you know, in this movie.
Oh yeah, it was. Trying not to get into that part.
I don't want to cry on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, my. Speaking of the trailer before the movie about that dog's way home.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see that. I can't see that. I've seen that trailer twice, and I thought the second time I was like, ha, I've seen this already. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Stupid lost dogs. Get me every time.
I won't be seeing that either. So
I didn't actually. I thought it was an emotional movie, but it wasn't like it didn't really bring that out in me. It wasn't that emotional for me.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't Runaway Dog emotional.
Yeah, I wasn't tearing up or anything. But no. I did feel like there was a lot of. You know, it had everything a good movie should have. You know, there was a lot of humor to it. There was a lot of good action scenes to it, but there was a lot of emotion it as well.
I thought all the characters, well, I can't say all the characters. I think Miles, Peter B., and Spider-Gwen had growth. They all learned something by coming through. I thought Spider-Noir, he took back a cube.
Right.
I thought Spider-Ham was just Spider. He was the same when he went back as when he showed up. And I thought Penny Parker the same thing, you know what?
Well, but there was a ton of emotion there even when the robot got destroyed.
Yeah, when the robot died, I was actually both times I saw it, I was surprised at how emotional that was.
Right.
And it was like, can't she build another one?
maybe.
You know, I mean, how attached to the thing is she? She's walking around in the thing eating popcorn while she's working. Right. She's under the table and she's sitting there eating up popcorn or whatever awesome. Next to her. But yeah, so I thought that was emotional. But I thought her as a person, there wasn't really a lot of character change or development throughout the movie. The three main characters definitely did.
Right, because those are the big three. That's who the movie was really about.
Right.
So.
And I thought, they each took something away because obviously Spider-Gwen, she goes back having made a friend where she's not keeping friends now.
Right.
Peter B. goes back thinking he might want to have kids. That's a pretty big change when you get back to your universe. And, you know, Miles learned how to use his powers. So, it is my favorite Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And then you couple all that into the artwork behind the whole thing. Is just incredible.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think we talked about this a little bit last week when we talked about the Miles comic book. I was never really a Miles Morales guy. You know, I've always been a Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But, you know, after reading that, the new Marvel Miles Morales comic last week, you know, I kind of came around after reading that, and I was like, you know, he's actually not a bad character because I really liked that comic. But after seeing this movie now, I mean, I like Miles quite a bit, almost to the fact where I want to go back and start digging up some of the older comics and reading them again because I really do like him as a character. But I don't feel like I know him all that well outside of the movie. You know, I don't know too much about him. Like, I didn't really know about the Spider-Venom power, some of his other powers and things like that, you know, until I saw him in the movie. So I think they did a great job with the character development there. And like I said, they got me on board with him. I don't know why this just popped into my head, I guess because I was talking about the comic books. But, you know, you notice every time they pull out their cell phones – they've got all these, B. Bendis was on there.
Right.
And,
they have all
know,
the... Yeah. I wish I could have screen grabbed a couple of those to really dig into what they are. But, yeah, I did. You see comic book artists in there, writers in there.
S. Ditko and S. Lee or something like that. And they were all there, which I thought was really cool that you got those nods to those guys, in the movie.
It's funny with Brian Michael Bendis now at DC.
Right.
And it's
right. You'd almost think that they wouldn't include him almost out of spite.
Well, no. He just wrote his last Miles was the last issue. He's done with them, but now he's with DC.
Well, no. He's been with DC for a while. I mean, he's done at least 15 issues of Spider-Man in Action Comics now already, so...
Spider-Man in Action Comics?
No, Superman. I'm sorry, Superman.
Oh, okay.
Superman
like
in
Spider-Man.
Action. Yeah. He's written quite a bit for DC already. But yeah, his last Marvel story actually just came out.
Right.
That he had written, you know, but he wrote those over a year ago.
But I think getting back to what you were saying about Miles and having you on board, it's, I think for guys like us, it's almost like Miles needed to be created because... Peter Parker was created in the 60s and given a mask like that and made imperfect so that people could relate to him and anybody could be him. And maybe in this day and age, we've kind of lost sight of that being Peter Parker is, you know, a white kid that, you know, he had his issues and right. people could relate. But now, even for guys like us, it's like having Miles and then... It just emphasizes that it can be anybody. And with it's almost like that spider bite is going to bring different things out of each individual. So, like, he has different powers than, you know, than Peter Parker did. And right. Peter B. Parker did. And Spider-Gwen and Spider-Ham. You know, everybody has right. Spider-Ham. His powers are he can fit all his tools in his pocket.
Right.
He's like, here's a hammer. It'll fit in your pocket. So it's, you're right. This movie got me on board. I was already reading back issues of Miles, but the movie really does emphasize that whole entire, it can be anybody. And I think we were caught in the trap of, you know, we're white kids that wanted to right. be like Peter Parker. It made it easier for us, but it just, another reason that this is just like my favorite movie now, Spider-Man movie. You see Oscar Isaac and his credit to the on IMDb.
No,
they didn't tell you who he was on IMDb. It was like he was.
Was that Oscar Isaac?
Yeah, that was Oscar Isaac at the end.
I didn't know that either.
So that's pretty cool because that's, you know, pretty big name for the sequel, hopefully. And he was listed as, how did they put it? Let me look. Interesting person number one.
Oh,
so awesome. So yeah, so they didn't want to tell you who he was going to be, right. Which was pretty cool. But yeah, that's just, you know, I thought that was now you're throwing time travel into it.
Well,
he was watching the whole thing.
You know what we didn't touch on at all, though, was... Like, we keep talking about the emotion and things like that, and we didn't touch it all on the Kingpin and his motivations for this whole thing because, you know, you come into it thinking, oh, he's the Kingpin and he's just doing Kingpin things, you
right.
know, and trying to be evil. But even his motivation, you know, he was trying to get back his wife and son who had died, and, you know, he was looking for another Vanessa, and I can't remember what the son's name is, but... even his motivations weren't evil in the sense that he was, you know, trying to conquer the world or do anything like this. He's just trying to get his family back. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
Right. At the expense of New York City. But,
well, right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, it wasn't,
he wasn't doing anything evil. He just wanted to destroy the city to get his family back.
Well, he didn't care the cost.
Right.
You know, I mean, he wanted
he
what he
wanted.
He was
doing it for love.
Right. Right. They, you know, like he does, you know, because
yeah.
that's the Kingpin. But, you know, exactly. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of destruction happening in his wake, and he didn't care about that at all. I'm not saying he's the good guy. But,
you
know,
just trying to look at the bright side of the Kingpin.
Exactly, right? His motivations were, in his mind, were pure. You know, I mean, he's trying to get his family back. Not even really taking into consideration that these versions of his family that he's ripping from another reality probably have lives that they don't want to leave.
Right.
And
well, the best villains have in their mind their purpose is just.
Right.
Like Thanos thinks his purpose is the right, you know, course.
Right.
So, you know, very few villains are just flat out just evil, like a Joker. He has
right.
no purpose. He just wants to watch the world burn. But So, yeah, you're right. In this case, it's like they gave the Kingpin a purpose. And in a way, it kind of makes him even more evil than like a Thanos, where Thanos is going to kill more people, but he has a greater purpose. Whereas, yeah, I guess any man would want to get his family back, but to destroy a city in the process?
Right.
You know, that's pretty big.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not saying he's a sympathetic villain necessarily, but
no.
But I did like that, you know, so many times again in most of these movies, it's just, you know, I have this evil plot just for the sake of,
right,
you know, having an evil plot. And, you know, they did give him, you know, somewhat reasonable motivations. And, you know, again, just another good character. You know, like the Wilson Fisk character was really good in this, and we didn't touch on him too much. So,
yeah, what's, you know, Dr. Octavius's motivation? I don't know.
That was less clear, right? We didn't really know
what
was
going
on
with
her.
She was just evil for the sake of being evil. Like, yeah,
exactly.
Sure, I'll help you out.
Yeah. I guess just the experiment, like for her, it's just about completing the task, I guess, and proving her theories that she can accomplish what she says she can accomplish.
I think he was just giving her the money to do what she wanted to do.
Right. And, you know, we saw some other villains, too, that were really... we have some pretty beefed up versions of like the Lizard and or the Green Goblin rather, and Scorpion.
Yeah,
they were
huge.
Yeah, not quite the way we're used to seeing those guys.
But so was Kingpin.
Right. Well, yeah, Kingpin. But Kingpin is a big guy, you know.
Yeah,
anyways,
his,
I mean, not
his
quite
head
as big
usually
as
usually is in the middle of his chest.
Exactly. But
I thought he was like more hunchback like.
But yeah, we're not used to seeing the Goblin quite as big as he was, and same thing with Scorpion. But I like that we got those, you know, we basically got the Sinister Six in this movie too, so
yeah.
I thought that, you know, like I said, I thought that was pretty cool.
Apparently in that universe they're just bigger than life.
Yeah, right, they're just
in that So all right, does that wrap it up?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we've covered everything. That'll wrap it up for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And next week we'll be doing
Aquaman. All right. You've already seen it. I have not. So.
Yes, I've seen it. I will save.
I don't want to ruin it for you. Yeah, don't tell me anything.
Yeah. No, it's the trailers don't give anything away. I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. The trailers.
Because you feel like you've seen most of the movie already by the trailers.
Yeah, I will say that. It's by the end of the movie, you forgot that you saw the trailers ahead of time. So
yeah.
that's pretty cool.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm seeing it again tomorrow as well. So that'll be fun next week. And so
next week, once again, you will have seen the movie twice and I will have only seen it once.
Well, you have the opportunity to see it twice by next week.
Oh, probably not. Christmas is in there. So,
oh, that's true.
I don't know when I still have to squeeze in Once Upon a Deadpool too, before it leaves the theaters.
Yeah, I want to see that, and I'd like to see Bumblebee this weekend. I know you have interest.
Although it's certified fresh, apparently, on Rotten Tomatoes. So
I'm telling you, a lot of people I know are out on the Transformer movies, but they're so out on it, they're not even paying attention to this movie.
Right.
And from what I'm hearing, this movie is going to be. It's supposed to be back to basics, almost like going back to the 1980s cartoon / comics and it just being more real.
Yeah, I get, like, I wasn't part of that Transformers generation anyway, so these characters don't really have that appeal to me like they do to, you know, some of the younger people. And that might be part of the reason why the movies didn't resonate with me as much as...
Well, I just like them because of the explosions.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely they're visual spectacles for sure,
yeah.
But like I said, that wasn't really my generation. I was, you know, well, yours either. I mean, we were coming out of that age group where we were still into things like that, but I don't know. We'll see. It could be a good movie.
Yeah. So I'll see it, and then I'll let you know if I'll give you a quick synopsis of it.
Well, that doesn't tell you like every, you like everything, so I can't really take your word for anything.
That's
so.
Not true. It's not true. I do like everything, and hence the podcast.
Right.
I do like everything, but I also know what other people's tastes are, and I can give you if I don't think you'll like it, I'll tell you you won't like it.
Yeah. What did I call you the other day? The eternal optimist.
I don't know. I know. I like. I see a value in something. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you don't see a value and you want to hit me up on Twitter and yell at me, go ahead.
Hit us up for anything at this point. Just hit us up.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. You can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. We are on the iTunes at The Bright Side Chat. We're on Google Play at The Bright Side Chat. And we are on Facebook as well, John.
Facebook.com/thebrightsidechat.
There we go. Let us know what you think. What did we miss in Spider-Man? We probably missed a few things because we like the artwork, so that we seem to concentrate on that the most.
Right.
But that's us. That's, you know, we read books with stories in them that it's all art. So what do you expect?
Words and pictures.
Words and pictures. Mostly pictures.
Yeah. Well, we're not bright, so...
Hey, I don't read pop-up books anymore.
Yeah.
All right, until next week.
Take care.
Hey, Fred.